This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Coors Light. Enter the Coors Light Ultimate Home Gate Giveaway, including a Yeti cooler, portable grill, pop-up tent, $200 gift card, and more. Go to the 98.5 The Sports Hub contest page to enter, and then crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Must be 21+. Rules and restrictions apply. Brought to you by Coors Light. Made for football. Made to chill.
B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Maz.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's a big boy Tuesday. Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, join us via remote, which I am doing as well. We have Maz and Murray back in our Town Fair Tire studios. Hour number two of Felger and Maz. Presented to you by DraftKings. Back to you, as promised. Charlie in Cranston. You're up next with Greg Bedard. What do you got, Charlie?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask if you thought the coaching staff could bring Stidham to that Alex Smith level that you were describing earlier, being efficient with the ability to make the occasional play, or okay. one of the eight stiffs that we'll get for $1 million. Do you think we'll get somebody that could do that?
Okay. I don't get the second part, what you're talking about, but what do you think Jared Stidham's ceiling is there, Greg?
Probably Alex Smith. Probably. I think there's potential. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I know there was some disappointment with what went on in training camp with Stidham and sort of his, you know, I don't want to say total lack of compete, but just, you know, a disappointing compete level for the job in training camp. But look, nothing's ever static in the NFL. Players can improve and regress and move certain ways, and I think that's true with Stidham. I mean, look, the kid seems to have a good head on his shoulders. He can throw the ball. He can run a little bit. His decision-making seems to be fine for the most part. He's just got to fine-tune some things.
You know, I feel like Jared Stidham has thrown more interceptions in his 14 NFL passes than Alex Smith has thrown in the last 10 years. So I sort of made those numbers up for effect. But, I mean, I read Alex Smith's interception numbers before. He's in the single digits every year. He throws under 10 interceptions every year. Stidham has, what, like 4 on 20 passes or something like this? So, I mean, I would feel that Jared Stidham has a million miles to go to be the steady, sort of patient game manager guy that Alex Smith is. Has a mile to go.
If he turns into Alex Smith, I'll do cartwheels.
Thank you.
By the way, Felger, just to keep you accurate in terms of Alex Smith as a rookie, as the first overall pick with the 49ers, he had 1 touchdown and 11 interceptions. His second year,
wow, that blows.
He threw 16 touchdowns and 16 interceptions and had an interception rate.
So this is good. So now you're going back 15 years? Give me his interception totals since then.
I am dealing with Jared Stidham.
Did your page jam there, Greg? Did your internet go down again? Why don't you give me your interception since that second year?
You're missing the point.
I am dealing with players, comparing the players in their path of development. So Jared Stidham, Alex Smith's interception rate was 6.7 and 3.6 his first years in the league. Jared Stidham's was, hang on a second,
25%.
25% and 11.5.
Oh, my God. 25%.
You're one out of every 4. Seriously.
So Alex Smith,
he got a higher batting average than Jackie Bradley Jr., for crying out loud.
So, Alex Smith, 2 years in the league, 17 touchdowns, 27 interceptions.
So I see your point, Greg. I get it. I mean, it's a long way to go to see what Stidham is. I just don't think he could be that in his third year, but you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Maz, you have a thought?
Oh, if he ever turned into Alex Smith, again, I would do. I was going to say his ceiling. I was going to say what Greg says. His ceiling is Alex Smith. And then I thought, oh, boy, is that unfair to Alex Smith. He was the number one pick in the draft. Like, that guy's got 100 wins in the league. That's a lot of wins in that league. That's no Alex Smith is no slouch. And, Greg, I know you're down on him. He's not a bum.
I'm not down on him. Like, you just taking it.
Okay, you don't like his age.
Out of context.
Yeah, so it's his age you don't want, really.
There's something.
It's his age there. And just the thought of Alex Smith, the caretaker quarterback. It doesn't matter if it's Alex Smith. I would have taken Alex Smith instead of Cam Newton this year. Absolutely. I said that in the offseason.
Okay.
But I'm not doing it again.
Okay.
All right. So I don't understand that. Like, you would have taken Alex Smith
last year.
What's
so hard to understand?
I'm going to lay it out again. You would have taken Alex Smith last year over Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. Now we've had almost a full season where Cam Newton has sucked and Alex Smith is back to winning games, but you wouldn't do it again. Like, does that make sense to you, Maz?
Well, I a little bit. Yeah, I understand what he's saying. The timeline matters to him. The timeline matters. And so he doesn't want to now go and start all over again with a 37-year-old. The only thing is, the part that I think Greg misses is that you're starting over either way.
I mean, I can't do games where I want them to be better next year. And it's going to be hard for them to be much better if Cam Newton's throwing for 69 and 84 yards a game. And that, I mean, I just don't know why you would go back for that. Rory in New Hampshire on this very topic. Go ahead, Rory.
Greg, please, you're killing me. You've got me siding with Felger on this, and it's making me nauseous. Captain Facilitation has painted you into a corner, and your reason for keeping Cam Newton next year is just familiarity with the system. That familiarity has netted you absolutely jack freaking squat through three quarters of the season. Alex Smith could come in here next week and run the pass system better than Cam because they're not running it.
Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, Roy, your phone's not good enough to continue, but, I mean, it's not like I've seen progress with Cam Newton within the system. I don't feel like the playbook's getting bigger, Greg. I feel like it's getting smaller, if anything. So
yeah, that's fine.
I mean, even though he's got some experience in it, maybe he's just not a fit for it. Maybe Cam Newton's never, you know, he's just such a supreme athlete and has run and played the position a certain way that he's never really had to dig into the reading of defenses and all of these things that they require of you here. And maybe Alex Smith has maybe different system, but he's just got, you know, he's just more in tune with that style of quarterback play and he'll pick it up better, even with less experience in the system. You don't think that's possible?
No, not with the same cast of characters. And that's something else we haven't talked at all about. The Patriots receivers are terrible and tight ends are terrible. They're terrible. No one was going to succeed. And this is where I was last week too. Brady didn't succeed with this guy. Now it's Cam Newton. It's the same cast of characters. They're just not good enough. So I don't care who you bring in next year. Those areas need to be improved. And I think Cam Newton could be better as a quarterback with better receivers and a tight end? Yes, I do. And you are discounting how big of a process it is to bring in a new quarterback, let alone if McDaniels leaves, now Jed Fish is your offensive coordinator. Good luck with all that. But it's just you're prolonging the inevitable, like the whole process. Like now we're talking about now it's going to be at least 8 games before Alex Smith gets on the same page with the coordinator who doesn't know him or the receivers who don't know him, let alone if they bring in anybody else in. It's just prolonging the process. At least Newton has some sort of foundation here. They bring in better players, spreads out the field a little bit more. Maybe he is a little bit better. I don't know. But I think that him back here with a younger quarterback, I think it can work. And I think this year humbled Newton where he realizes I'm not the show.
Yeah,
and
right.
I might have to go to the bench at some point.
His attitude is fine. Like I like his attitude. He's been a good fit from that. You're not hearing me about his attitude. I don't think he can play anymore. Chris in Wilmington. Go ahead, Chris.
So I think Wentz's benching was a ploy by Peterson to save his job because that offense is absolutely abysmal. But let's say Wentz does become free next year. Where would the panel put Wentz on their list of desirable quarterbacks to come to New England? And what are your thoughts on him in general?
Thank you, Chris. All right, panel. Go ahead, Greg. You start.
He's not going to become available. So there's no point in answering this question. The dead cap money with where the Eagles are with the salary cap, it's not happening. He's there. They cannot cut him or release him or trade him. They can't do it.
Okay, so I did see on Get Up this morning, I think Dan Graziano reported something to the effect of if they do it within 3 days of the start of the league year, that the dead money hit, Greg, is only $35 million instead of 60. I know.
But that's the point, not that big of a deal.
But right. Well, but the point being is if they keep him on the roster, they're paying him that anyway, right?
And Felger.
And then there's also the post-June 1 thing. I mean, Greg, there are rare cases where you can't do it for cap reasons. But you know how I feel about this. I'm sick of hearing about this. I mean,
Felger,
hold on. The Steelers can't release Antonio Brown because they have a dead cap charge. And then they release Antonio Brown. If a team wants a player gone for the most part, they can get rid of him. They can figure out a way. I don't know how many times you have to see that before it gets beat over your head that there's usually a way.
I'll play along. No thanks. I want no part of him. I'd take Jared Goff before I took Carson Wentz.
Oh, I'd take him in a minute.
Take the cap thing out of it. Just him as a player.
Take him. Absolutely.
No,
I take him.
I would take him.
But
no.
Listen. Can I make a point, please? Like, Felger, I largely agree with you about the cap. You can manipulate any way you want, but not next year and not the Eagles. Right now, with the salary cap at $176 million, right now, the Eagles are $69 million over the cap. Right now.
All right, so look, I mean, I've seen it before. I've seen it a million times. Everyone says, nope, they can't get rid of him. The dead cap charge, don't even think about it, and then the guy's gone. I've seen it a million times.
I'll tell you, look, to me, I bring him in, and I'll tell you why I would bring him in. Aside from the fact that he has ability and all that, it's becoming more and more clear to me that the real problem in Philadelphia is the fact that Frank Reich is not there anymore. Carson Wentz started to go sideways and downhill after Frank Reich left. And so bring him to Foxborough, give him Belichick and McDaniels, and you know what? He'll be good again. He might not be quite what he was. Who knows? But he'll be a hell of a lot better than he is with Doug Peterson.
Let me tell you, I'm fine with the reclamation project. And I put Sam Darnold in that category too. To me, he's a reclamation project. Because, you know, I don't know exactly what he was coming out of SC, and the Jets have done their best to ruin him. So, fine. You want to try and start over with Darnold or Wentz or someone like this who's a reclamation project? I want other guys in here. Like, I don't want that to be the guy. I want him next to Garoppolo, him next to Stafford, him next to Alex Smith, him next to a draft pick. Like, then I'll do that. But I'm not hitching my wagon to Wentz or Darnold or any of those guys. So that's just my idea. Let's pick this up on the other side with 10 questions for Greg Bedard right after this.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Cape Cod Cafe Pizza. Perfect for dinner, whether you cook it in the oven or on the grill. So next time you're out, grab a few Cape Cod Cafe pizzas. They're available at your local grocery's frozen food section, or just order them online at CapeCodCafePizza.com. Have it shipped directly to you to enjoy.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Maz.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's a big boy Tuesday. Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal.
So you're a business that's thriving. But then, don't just bounce back. Bounce forward with serious and reliable gig speed internet. But is it secure? Sure, it's secure.
So how do I do this?
We do this together. Bounce forward with Comcast Business.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for.
Boo! Boo.
It's Felger and Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
You want the answer? You've got to ask the question.
Do you have an opinion based on if you had to go with your gut, which way it would go?
Sometimes you have to ask it over and over and over again.
Why?
This is 10 Questions with Greg Bedard and Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We got 10 questions. We have about 8 minutes to do it, so let's be quick. These are buzzer options that are best of. So really, there's no reason to recap it, Billy. Why don't you just hit one, and I'll give number 10, and we'll start right away. Hit it.
I'm drunk. You're gross. Let's go.
I like it. Number 10. Was Greg Williams aiding in the Jets' tank with that zero blitz at the end of the Raiders game, or is he just dumb? Intentional or dumb?
That's just him. Every offensive coordinator in the league knows it. He got off the field on the previous down, the previous drive in the red zone with the same type of call. He did it on the play before. That's just who he is.
Dumb. I refuse to give him credit for being smart when he's dumb.
Aiding in the tank. He was the scapegoat, thus the firing. It's full on tank for Trevor Lawrence, and that finish was further proof of it to me.
Agreed. It is something that he does, but I think it's also, I think they're just putting their players in the worst position and hoping they don't succeed. So the coaches are tanking. Next.
I'm drunk. You're gross. Let's go.
Number 9, take your pick, Greg. Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen?
Ooh. I went with Josh Allen just because I want the height. I want the athletic upside, and I'm not getting that out of Baker.
Josh Allen, bigger and more athletic. Absolutely.
For those reasons, that's why I'm taking Josh Allen. Size, toughness, and Mayfield's still a little, hey, look at me. Like, that bugs me.
All right, I want to get to Allen later on, because if you watched that ball game last night and your eyes weren't opened, I don't know what you're watching. So we'll get to that coming up. But next.
Make it rain.
Greg, is Joe Judge legit?
He might be. He's doing a really good job. I think he needs to thank Brian Flores for letting Patrick Graham go, because that Giants defense is playing well. But Judge is doing a good job.
Yeah, not yet he's not. I mean, not yet he's not legit. I mean, he's doing a good job of late, but I'm not taking my pants off for a guy who's 5-7. No.
I say yes. I know he's a walking hard-o football cliche. He drives me crazy, but nobody saw that win in Seattle coming. They're 5-7, and five of their losses by a touchdown or less, and the defense is legit, so I say yes.
So, you know, here's the one thing I'll give him, not knowing anything about him other than his, you know, hard-o public persona. I do like the fact that he's a special teams coach. So I don't feel like he's going to be one of these glorified coordinators that when the other side of the ball is on the field, his head is buried in the play sheet. You know, he has a chance to be a head coach and not just a promoted coordinator where there's another coordinator doing the other half of the football team. I think that's what the league has become. And maybe those special teams guys, Harbaugh, Belichick, really, at his core, has a chance. And Joe Judge now has a chance to be a true head coach, which, you know, maybe has something in his favor. Next. My tongue doesn't move that way, the way Maz's does. Number seven, in a recent podcast, Jonathan Kraft would not dismiss the idea of making 50-yard field goals worth 4 points or short field goals worth only 2. Your thoughts, Greg?
My thoughts are I would be interested in hearing more. And also, Jonathan Kraft is doing interviews now. This is news to me.
Atta boy, Greg.
Greg, why are you, Greg, why would you be interested to hear more? So you like it?
Why? Because I'm somewhat interested. Like 55, you know. Let's talk about the yardage. I'm looking for, you know, a little bit more creativity in the NFL game, and to not, you know, maybe press the issue with fourth down plays. I'm open for the discussion.
I despise it. I hate it. I don't want teams kicking field goals, period. So, and look, I'm not saying you should never do it, but I don't want some rinky-dink, you know, calibrated metric from doing field goals. No.
No. Stop screwing with the rules and watering down the product. Absolutely not.
Okay. I'll put different point values on it, but if Wiggy were here, I know he'd back me up. I am into the 50-yard extra point. You know, make the extra point 50 yards, so that's really... There's really drama on that. If you're, you know, you're down a point, need to go to overtime, no time on the clock, you know, do you trust your bozo kicker from 50, or do you have to line up and go for it and go for the win? Like, I think that, so to me, that's the only thing I want to screw around with on the field goals, is to make a 50-yard extra point. Next.
I wouldn't sleep on Brian Hoyer.
Thank you there, Greg. The Patriots are currently quarantined in their hotel rooms in Los Angeles for the week. They can't leave their hotel room. They can't leave the hotel. If you had to quarantine at one hotel, Greg, and I'm going to allow you to leave your room. You don't have to stay in the room. But if you had to quarantine in one hotel for a week that you've been at before in the course of your duties as a sports writer, what hotel would you pick?
I'm going to pick the San Francisco downtown Marriott, where I spent... When I covered the Dolphins played Seattle and the Niners back-to-back, and we spent Thanksgiving week out there, and I had a blast. It was a great time.
It's a good hotel. Yeah, I'd go with the Ritz-Carlton in Naples, Florida. That's what I'd go with. They had the baseball winter meetings there once. I think I covered them by the entire thing from the pool.
Excuse me.
I will go with whatever that hotel was that we got booked in Miami for the last Super Bowl I'm sure I'll ever get to go to. That place was the balls. Location was perfect. Five-minute walk to the beach. Loved it.
Remember, you can't leave the hotel, though, Murray.
I thought you just said I can leave the hotel.
You can leave your room, but you can't leave the hotel.
Oh,
you've
got to
be in the hotel.
Then I'll just sneak out, and I'll deal with the repercussions.
Break the rules.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a resort at Camelback in Scottsdale that the Bruins stayed at for like 3 days, where the Writers stayed at as well. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I've been there. That's nice.
I'll take that one. Next.
We believe in Jared Stidham.
Okay, number five. Who do you believe is the biggest tool bag in the NFL right now, Greg?
I went with Bruce Arians. I don't know. I'm tired of him. I'm tired of listening to him, what he's doing with Brady. He's being a tool bag.
I consider this to be like power rankings for tool bags. So it's all it's really about what happened in that particular week. So I'm going with Mike Thomas, the special teams guy on the Bengals, who twice popped someone on the Dolphins before the ball got there. And what was it? Jakeem Grant, who he absolutely lit up. What a dink move. What a complete dink move. Mike Thomas, Bengals.
I'm also going with Bruce Arians for continuing to throw Tom Brady under the bus. He is an ass.
Next. How does that taste? Know your history.
Like dog food.
Number four. Who is your favorite non-game network analyst? You know, a guy maybe on the pregame show, postgame show, midweek, whatever. Who's your favorite non-game analyst?
Just to be clear, I don't watch a lot of that stuff. Actually, I don't watch any of it. So, but I'm going to go with Chris Sims because I really enjoy his podcast. I think he's got terrific insights. He watches all the games. Really good football talk on his podcast. I enjoy listening to him.
Can I go with Mark Spears of Get Up?
Sure.
I love that guy.
Mark or Marcus?
Oh, Marcus Spears. Mark Spears is the basketball writer, right?
Yeah, they're cousins.
Marcus Spears. I think he is wildly entertaining. I think he's absolutely great, and he has great insight, too. I think he's terrific.
I'll go with Dan Orlovsky because like some of his play breakdowns that you'll find on Twitter and that he does on ESPN, I think are really good.
Solid. Agreed. And you know who else is excellent on ESPN, who I don't see as much anymore, was Hasselbeck. And I can't remember if it was Tim or Matt. It might even have been Tim.
I think it was Tim, yeah.
He did excellent work at the video board. Excellent. And he used to do a Monday morning segment on, I can't remember what show, but I thought he used to do a terrific job. I don't see him anymore. So, and I think Orlovsky has sort of taken over maybe that role. But I thought Hasselbeck used to do a great job with that stuff. All right, next.
So if you miss two on the first one, you get it the second time, you're still down one.
Don't yell at me. Number three, who's your least favorite non-game network analyst?
Mike Florio, just not a fan.
Can I pick anybody on the NFL Network? Am I allowed to do that? Can I pick anyone there? But if you made me pick someone in particular, I'm going with Steve Smith.
Seeing as Greg already said Florio, he would be my number one. I'll just say the entire cast of Good Morning Football, who are just empty shells that look good on TV.
It's so true. The NFL Network. When's the last time you heard anyone say anything on the NFL Network?
Oh, they blow. The whole network blows.
Useless. Useless. They've made the board.
They somehow made Steve Smith boring.
Yeah. Seriously. I think, to me, pick any one of them, they all stink.
Oh, so good. So true. All right, next.
Day to day, Michael. We'll go day by day. Day to day. We are day to day. We'll just take it day by day. Right now, we're day by day. We'll just be day by day.
Thank you, Bill. Number two, who has the dumbest look, physical look, as a coach? Like, let me give you some examples. Bruce Arians and his stupid chapeau. Doug Peterson and his stupid visor. Matt Patricia, I know he just got fired, but Matt Patricia and the pencil behind his ear, okay? Things like that. Who's got the dumbest look as a head coach in the NFL?
For me, it's Arians' game day look with the shield and his glasses and, like, I don't know. He's not really talking to anybody. I don't know what he's doing on the sideline. So I don't know what's going on there.
I mean, to me, this list begins and ends with Matt Patricia. Absolutely. And if you make me pick someone who still has a job, then I'll take Doug Peterson and that stupid tennis pro visor. I think he looks like a complete clown.
Yeah, I am also going with Surfer Dad Doug Peterson, who it dawned on me just like a week ago. He looks like a fatter Derek Lowe, and he's an absolute stiff, and it'll forever boggle my mind that the Patriots lost a Super Bowl to that guy.
Matt Patricia and that pencil, that affectation, that Mr. Smarty Pants, oh, Mr. Rocket Scientist, you just had to pull the pencil right from your ear to redo your equations. Oh, you are so smart. Oh, what a fraud. That is the pencil behind the ear of that fat, useless slob, Matt Patricia, who sucks, is absolutely the worst. Absolutely. All right, last one. Oh, my God, get to the question. Please, just ask the question. Appropriate. Last one. Do you find this Patriots season interesting, Greg?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, monitoring the standings, watching other games, how it's going to impact things. Is Cam Newton going to be able to hit the broadside of a barn when he throws the ball? I find it all interesting.
First 8 or 9 weeks, no. Last few, yes.
Not in the least. 1950s offense, quarterback play basically unwatchable, not over Brady being gone. The new uniforms are terrible.
Most interesting Patriots season for me by far since 2014. 14 was the year Garoppolo played the first month and they won the Super Bowl, or was that 16?
16.
So then 16. Since 2016. 14 was pretty snappy, too. I like the Darrelle Revis year and how that ended. I think that little era there, 2014, 15, where you lose the AFC title game, 16, Brady suspended. Deflategate, Garoppolo, like that sort of era to me was the last time the Patriots were interesting. The next three, four seasons after that, bleh. And this one has brought me back. I find this season fascinating. All right, back to your calls. I promise right after Big Jim Murray's up.
It's not complaining.
Oh, you had a mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No, 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 no. It's always no.
Felger, Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, back to your phones with Bedard. I'll put these two calls back to back. Martin on the Cape, what do you got?
I just wanted to thank Murray for being the daily voice of reason and standing up to the daily assault by the Shining Path gorillas. Just brutal to listen to. They should all be thrown in a Peruvian prison for their radical viewpoints. This was all over after the Denver loss, and everyone knows it. The Colts, the Niners, Saints, and even the Steelers, they all handled quarterback transition, but the Pats have failed miserably. So face the music, no playoffs.
Okay, I agree with that second thing. That first thing, you know how I feel. I believe the path is alive. Martin in the Cape, not a fan of the path. Chris and Southie, what do you think?
First of all, on the Wentz piece, you could pay me all of his dead money, and I don't want him coming to New England. He sucks. He's a bum. But on the path, I don't think people are talking about the Indianapolis Colts enough. They're 8-4 right now, but their next three games, they got to go to Vegas. Then they got the Texans, who are sneaky, not that bad, and then they got to go to Pittsburgh. They could easily lose three games in a row here coming up, and that's another team that needs to be in the mix for the path talk.
Okay, Chris, I've got it mapped out. I just would disagree with your characterization as easily lose three in a row. I think Indy's pretty good. I don't know if they're the best, but I think they're pretty good, and I think it's a tall order to ask them to lose three in a row, but that's the path. If this is why I said you yesterday, Murray, you want Vegas to lose to Indy. Okay, you want to go after you're just a game behind Vegas, and you have the head-to-head. So it's better for your path math if Indy goes into Vegas and wins next week. If, however, Vegas wins, now you need to catch Indy, which means Indy would need to lose their these three in a row. They'd need to lose Houston and then at Pittsburgh, which is doable, but I don't love it. I don't love those odds. So I think you're better off having Indy claim that second wild card. Indy beats Vegas. They knock them back down to you, and there's your path. So that's what I would say on that. Let's grab, we've got James in Cranston on Jared Stidham. Go ahead, James.
Listen, I understand the name of the game is championships, okay? However, there comes a point when you need to realize that your team is not good enough to win. And Belichick is at that point. Forget about whatever deal he has with Cam. Start Stidham. Give him a real chance. See what you have in them, then you'll know you do come draft it. What do you guys think?
Okay, Greg, what do you think?
Belichick will do that when they're eliminated from the playoffs, not before.
He makes a good point, though. The caller makes a good point, which is now, I mean, I already feel like I'm at the stage where I know what Stidham is, and I don't think Stidham's the guy. But if they don't, well, then they have to play him. If they were all up in the air, they got to get a better read on the guy and see what he looks like in some games, and then that could affect what they want to do in the draft. I think that's a fair point.
Doesn't it feel like that their issues with him to this point, Greg, are makeup related, intangible related? Because it feels like he fell out of favor for something other than what happened on the they weren't on the field in the offseason. And, a couple weeks of training camp, I guess. It feels like there's a character assessment there that they made on the player that something didn't sit well with them.
You mean outside of the fact that out of his first 28 NFL passes, five ended up in the arms of the opponent?
That doesn't help. That? Yeah, that doesn't help.
Is that bad?
But yeah, I largely agree with you that they have questions about his makeup. And, look, his stint was fine the other day. I thought more of the first pass that he had where he got belted by Joey Bosa. He actually had to wait a beat for Harry to come open. He did that. He knew he was going to pay a price coming cold off the bench. Did it. It was slightly underthrown, but he was hit.
That was a good play by him, Greg. That was a decent play by him. He almost completed.
It was.
That was almost a 20-yard ball down the field with a guy right in his grill. And was it Harry that he was throwing to there?
Yeah.
Almost maybe could have had it. I didn't think that was a bad play by him.
Yeah, to me, out of the three passes he threw, that was the most impressive one. The one to Michelle, nobody was open. He put it where only Michelle could catch it. Michelle made a phenomenal catch on that. And then the touchdown to Gunner was just it's a read one player on the defense. He's not looking off the safety. It's a play that the Patriots run all the time. You have a wide receiver screen, and depending on what the inside cornerback does, or safety in that case, if he comes forward on the screen, which he did there, the wide receiver and the quarterback both read it the same way. The wide receiver goes down the field, he catches it and scores. Chris Hogan did the same thing. If the cornerback stays deep, then they throw the wide receiver screen. It's paint by numbers quarterbacking. It wasn't real NFL quarterbacking.
So, that play there, like, Olszewski was wide open. Okay, he was wide open. It wasn't the difficulty of the throw, it was how he threw it that
it was
I liked.
Decisive.
Yeah,
right.
He gunned it. I mean, he did. He gunned it. The ball had velocity. It was on target. It was on the money. Like, the timing was, like, that's what I liked. I liked the way he threw it. The difficulty level of the pass was not, it was not a hard pass to make.
I think his whole stint, Greg, was decisive. He planted his foot and threw. And I don't know. It sounds like I'm drawing conclusions based on one series. But he did kind of look like a different guy just in that one series. So it's interesting to see where that goes. They're headed to the Rams on Thursday night. Sean McVay, a repeat of the Super Bowl just a couple of years ago. Get your thoughts on that game and your calls in our long commercial-free segment next.
Boston's home for sports.
Hey, it's
Felger Mass.
Okay, when you call and say two things, three things, you're going to have to wait for me to reach for a pen.
Number one.
And then I'm going to have to write it down.
Because they know how to build winning relationships.
I, for one, am not smart enough to keep two or three things in my head.
Felger Mass.
So we prefer just a single thought.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, Coach. Just trying to look for you. Man. So much respect for you.
Likewise.
You're the best.
You've done a great job.
Yeah, so, hey, you always do, though. Yeah. Been doing it, you're the best, man. So
you're taking over, buddy.
No, no. Hey, you guys.
It's been interesting to be able to study for these couple of weeks. Yeah. That's really good. You got a lot of good stuff.
Appreciate you saying that. Feelings are mutual. The way that you guys are able to shift your identity and really still be able to figure it out, week in and week out, it's unbelievable, man. It's really a credit to you guys. So much respect.
You guys are playing good now.
So there's that slobber fest we've referenced before between Belichick and Sean McVay before the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. You're already shaking your head, Miz.
Oh, yeah, you're the best coach, yeah. The way you guys change it up every week, change your identity, it's a thing of beauty. It's great to watch. It's just so much respect. I mean, you're the best, man. You're the best.
The thing is,
little puppy dog coaching the Rams.
I mean, that was a bad look for him. It was a bad day for his team, his offense for sure. Wade Phillips and the Rams defense had a decent day for sure. But Sean McVay and that, offense was emasculated by the Patriots. They had the answers to the test in that game for sure. But that all sort of hides the fact that I actually like Sean McVay, Greg. I think he gets it. When I watch the Rams, yeah, they have a decent amount of talent, but I think they run a tight. I just think they're well coordinated. They're well coached. I love when they go tempo, when they decide to speed it up and go tempo, and they'll come out of the huddle, boom, right to the line, first sound, ball snapped, everyone set. Like, I just think they run a nice operation. I like watching their offense. I like Sean McVay. I think he gets it. I think he's one of the good coaches in the league. Am I wrong about this?
No, I think you're right. And I think, one decision that he made, letting Wade Phillips go and going with Brandon Staley at defensive coordinator, was a really smart forward thinking thing. He could have easily just kept Wade Phillips based on how the defense has played. But he knew that, look at Wade's history. He kind of burns out after 3 years with the same scheme, and it's somewhat simple and predictable, where Staley does a few more things. I largely agree with you that I think that, the Rams have it going on as far as what they do schematically.
I mean, what I like is that they've changed their identity now. Like, they were sort of as much as they had talent on defense a couple of years ago, and they did, they were really more of an offensive team. And it felt like kind of a, I don't want to say high-flying air show, like one of those typical offenses.
Well, no. I mean, remember their regular season game against Kansas City?
Yeah, it was 51-45 or whatever the hell it was.
That's what they were.
Yeah, and so, but now, to me, they're totally different. It's a different kind of, you know, the offense isn't nearly as explosive as it was, and their defense is good. It is really good. I was looking it up today. As much as their defense is good against the run, I think they're the second best team in the league against the pass. They're in the top five of points again. Like, the Patriots are going to have their hands full on Friday, Thursday night offensively. And this, to me, is why I want to see this game. Because this is a complete defensive team in the Rams that can stop the Patriots' running game. And then what? You know, and so, and then the Patriots are going to have to be able to throw with some complexity if they're going to score points in this game. This is a really good test for their offense.
I do wonder about McVay, though. So as many good things as I can say about him and his offense that I just like watching, because I do feel like it's a well-oiled machine, and it works against most teams. The thing that he used to do, and Greg, you tell me if he still does, which is the same personnel group. It's 11 personnel, right? The three receiver thing. Like, doesn't he run that 90% of the time and just sort of, and only has a dozen plays, but they're all sort of tricked up with different formations and guys in different spots, but it's all sort of the same concept, the same plays with the same personnel. That feels to me like that plays into Belichick's hand. I mean, you know, you may be able to get away with that against some coaches, but if you just do what you do against Belichick, those teams usually lose. Are the Rams still that way?
Yeah, Felger, it's hard for me to say. I have not studied them yet. I have seen a little bit of them here and there on the TV copy this season. I do think they're running more multiple tight end sets. You know, they have Everett, they have Higby. I think they have the ability to do different things now. The thing that really scares me into this going into this game is, you know, and Maz sort of touched on it, you know, they have the ability to stop the run and make the Patriots one-dimensional. The thing that really scares me, when I see the Rams, last time I saw them, they were on national television, they're really fast up front. I mean, like, really fast, like a different speed. And my fear is Cam Newton comes into this game, and Cam's kind of on his own speed. And we've talked about it before. I've had issues with it, and that he's going to be way too slow in this game against the Rams, and he's going to get exposed, and he might even get embarrassed in this game. That's my worst fear for the Patriots coming into this. So I hope they get them tuned up and ready to go, or else it's going to be a very long game.
Okay, the Patriots, prohibitive underdogs in this game. This is a team they have no business beating, frankly. You know, if you just go talent to talent, roster to roster, and even the situation, you know, second day of a road trip in L.A., quarantined, and, you know, I know they got a little break there that the Rams played on the road last week and had to fly back, so they got a little bit of a head start, but still, you know, it's the second of two games on the road. They've been in their hotel rooms for 4 days, and that's just a little nuance. Just go roster to roster. It's like, you know, I mean, if you drafted the teams, who's the first Patriot off the board and where would he go? You know, I mean, aren't you taking like four or five Rams before you get to the first Patriot?
Well, I was going to say Gilmore, except I'm taking Ramsey before I'm taking Gilmore.
It's not even the best corner on the field. No?
No, I would take Gilmore. Ramsey, his focus kind of goes in and out. So does Gilmore's. But I would rather have Gilmore. You know, one thing that stands out, look, the Rams have talent. There's no question about that. Probably more talent than the Patriots. But I haven't been overly impressed by them. And the thing is, the difference between their offense this year and last year, look, the offensive line is better. The Patriots have seen three terrible offensive lines in a row between Houston, the Cardinals, and the Chargers. This is a bigger step up. They don't have Whitworth at left tackle. That's their one weak point. But the thing is, last year, the Rams could not run the ball at all. And Jared Goff in shotgun having to throw the ball, that is not a good Jared Goff. If the Patriots can make them one-dimensional, if they can shut down the run, which they have done better in recent weeks, then make the Rams one-dimensional, then they can stop the Rams. And I think this is going to be a pretty low-scoring game.
Me too.
I also think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a field goal game.
All right. Greg, thanks for the stint. We appreciate it. Do me a favor. Go easy on Alex Smith, man, a little bit. Like, you're coming a little hot on the Alex Smith thing. We got to figure out what exactly he did to you in the past. Had to be
No. It's you. You don't listen. You don't comprehend. You're the problem.
Okay, it's my comprehension's an issue. Yeah, you're not the only one to say that. I can get you in touch with someone here in my house who I think has a similar feeling. Greg, thanks so much. We'll catch you next week, buddy.
See you, boys.
Okay, that's boy. Greg Bedard. I'll go back. I think on paper, if you go roster to roster, the Rams and this game, the Patriots have no business winning this game. No, if they didn't have the coach they have, they would have no shot of winning this game. And I would say the same thing about another team that I watched last night. Both those games last night, I think, have something to jump off with the Patriots. I watched one team last night that they have no business beating and another team that they have a business beating. Okay, I want to get to that and your phones on everything we've discussed. Greg's interesting thoughts on the quarterback situation here in New England, the path, all of it. To your calls and these thoughts on last night's game right after Big Jim Murray's update. It'll take 90 seconds. There are no commercials here.
This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Cape Cod Cafe Pizza. Perfect for dinner, whether you cook it in the oven or on the grill. So next time you're out, grab a few Cape Cod Cafe pizzas. They're available at your local grocery's frozen food section, or just order them online at CapeCodCafePizza.com. Have it shipped directly to you to enjoy.